standing like a tree with my roots tucked down, my branches wide and open. Calm down the rain, calm down the sun, calm down the fruits to a heart that is open to be standing like a tree with my roots tucked down, my branches wide and open. Calm down the rain, calm down the sun, calm down the fruits to a heart that is open to love.
Let me invite you to just take a few nice deep breaths and maybe allow your eyes to close or softly focus on something. And as you breathe, just allow yourself to arrive in this present moment. There's already been a lot of activity this morning, a lot of information shared, a lot of interactions. This is a time now to be just become aware of you. Noticing the sensation of breathing in and breathing out. Noticing how it is to be held by the chair, held by gravity to this earth. And then just allowing your awareness to drop inside. How is it with your body? Is it with your thoughts and feelings? There's nothing to change, nothing to fix. Just simply to notice. There's a saying that offers an invitation to be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. Be still. And just be. How is it to be? And now an invitation to meet this moment as it is. With curiosity and kindness and love. To maybe open your heart to life as it is, unprotected and undefended. Gently bringing your awareness back to your breath, to your body, to the sounds, to the other beings that are here. And as you're ready, just gently opening your eyes.
Standing like a tree with my roots tucked down, my branches wide and
things we can learn from the trees, yes? And we're blessed 302 times, was it? At least in the Bible.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. You know, to just have trees that we can just be with here. It's wonderful. And so thank you. Thank you, Gwen. Thank you, Paul. Interesting little moment here. I don't know if you all noticed something, but I just had a little experience a few moments ago during the opening song when they were singing. And all the chatter that was still going on in here as they were singing, you know. And so this is all about part of learning and everything like that. A younger part of James Cress would have got up in the middle of that and said, "Hey, everybody, we are now singing a song. Could we please direct our attention to our musicians over here?" But I didn't do that, and you know, I don't want you to feel disrespected or dishonored or anything like that. And yet, you know, just it was almost like this experience of just the apparent chaos of life. You know, have you had experiences like that before where life just seems chaotic? It just doesn't seem to make any sense. It's just weird, you know? And so I was just sitting down here, and again, just being down here, it's you sort of get everything. But it was amazing to hear this beautiful music, this beautiful song going on, all of the buzz and all of the chatter going on out here, you know, and me just in my quiet little moment going, wow, what in the world is going on here, you know? And it's the unfolding and the expression of love. And love, as it unfolds and expresses in our life, sometimes it's beautiful, blissful, glorious. Yes? And other times, just plain weird. Do you ever feel like life is just messing with you sometimes? You know, how much crazier, how much more absurd, how much more can it be, you know? But that's really why I'm excited about this little series that we're in here. We're talking about for the next few weeks. I'm not sure how much longer it's going to go, but we're going to talk about from stewardship to kinship, sacred relationship, this idea of being in sacred relationship in the many different ways that we relate to things. We relate to ourselves, we relate to others, we relate to creation that's around us, we relate to our jobs, our careers, all that kind of stuff. And my invitation here is to invite us to see these relationships in a new way, to maybe see them with new eyes, new minds, new ears, and new thoughts. And the general invitation, this will be repeated throughout this series here today, is to consider this. We are not here to save the world, but we are here to belong more fully to it. And I think that's just worthwhile to just allow to soak and to marinate in. Because I don't know about you, but my default response is, from the story I just shared with you about the service later on, I want to manage, I want to control, I want life to be ordered and predictable and scalable and all of that. And that's part of what it means to be human. But I think the more lasting and the more eternal, timeless value is to think of, no, I'm here not to save the world, but to belong more fully to it. Think of it this way. Oftentimes, we think that we are human beings trying to have a spiritual experience. Have you ever thought that way before? I'm here in this human body, and so I'm going to go from here to here to here to here to here to here, you know, to find this spiritual experience. What if the reverse were true? We are spiritual beings having this human experience. To me, it just adds a lot more lightness and laughter to it, you know? And at times, it's kind of scary. Why? Because if I'm a spiritual being having a human experience, this life is kind of pointless. Yes? Steph and Pam and I, yesterday's part of our exploration, we went to a seminary. It could be a seminary. Cemetery. Yeah. Seminaries can become cemeteries for people, yes. But, you know, we went to a cemetery. Why do I keep saying that? We went to a cemetery, and I've told you this before, but there's something very spiritual for me about just being in a cemetery. Why? We're walking around, and, you know, there's tombstones or gravestones that are there, you know, and most of the gravestones that are there have three things on them: a name, two dates, and a dash between the dates. Yeah. This human life that we live is just that little eensy-weensy dash between two dates that come, you know? And I mean, to think about that, to juxtapose that into the question that we all have, you know, is my life meaningful? Do I make a difference? Did I matter to someone? You know, in relationships with our parents or with a former spouse or with a friend, you know, this nagging question is, did my presence matter? Did my presence make a difference? Did my presence make an impact? You know, and that's a normal human question. But it seems that as we go throughout life, life shows us that it really doesn't matter. I mean, what if we called this the church of the pointless? Yeah. How would you feel about it if we just gathered here every day to remind ourselves that this life is pointless? This church is pointless. All the stuff that we do here doesn't matter. It doesn't mean a damn thing. Yeah, it is crazy, isn't it? But that's where my head goes when I think about just the brevity of life. Now again, this is not to be dismissive or flip or cavalier, because yes, our lives do matter. Our lives do make a difference. Our lives do make an impact. We have an impact on other people in ways that we can see and in ways that we can't see. So that is true and that is real. But if we make that the primary end of our life, things get just all out of whack. I was, you know, thinking about when was it Copernicus, the scientist years ago, who posited that the Earth is not the center of the universe. The Earth is not even the center of our solar system. You know, the Earth revolves around this thing called the sun. You know, and you know the slowest people to embrace that? We're the churches. Yeah, how odd. Places that talk about the greatness and the vastness of God and the transcendent and the spiritual had the hardest time letting go of this idea that the Earth is not the center of everything, that we're just but a speck in this great cosmic experience. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of liberating, isn't it? So, with that, this is your takeaway. For those of you that need, what can I take away from all this? James floating up here in the clouds. You know, what can I take with me into my life today? I gave you these last week. This is for you note takers who need a practical takeaway. Do it away. When we're living in relationship with each other, there's a couple questions to ask. It usually starts with this idea of, what do I need? What do I need to have in this? Whatever it is, okay? And then the second question asked is, what do you need? And oftentimes, especially in our, you know, I think this is a thread in all of our relationships, when there's a gap between what I need and what you need or they need, then there becomes a break. And we become very adept at humans of ghosting, separating, drawing boundaries. Have you experienced that? You know, we've got this thing called the internet and cell phones. You know, we're so connected, and yet we're also still lonely. So a third question to ask when we think about this idea of sacred relationship is, what do we need? If you're finding yourself in a disruption of sorts, in whatever relational thing or problem that's capturing your attention, you know, be aware of what you need, be aware of what the other person needs, but can you get to a place where, in whatever your relationship, what does this relationship need? And sit with that. And I think oftentimes if we can find ourselves in that playground of what do we need, that's where new things happen. If you think of it this way, you know, when we live in relationship with something, there's an entity here and there's an entity here, and there's a flow, there's an attraction or a draw, you know, between them. And then what happens in the absurdity of life, something new will come into it. It could be a job, it could be a health scare, it could be another person, you know, and now all of a sudden the energy of the relationship is drawn to this third, okay? And we look at that third and we either really like it or we don't like it. We judge it, we label it, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But if we can keep the container and hold this container of, what does this relationship need? Me, you, this third thing. Don't ask me how, but I've seen it happen over and over again. There's a fourth new thing that can come from that. I don't pretend to know what it is. I can't manage it. I can't control it. But I know that that's how life works. So here's a question to ask. What if I was in a, whoops, excuse me here, my microphone's falling off. It's okay. It's all right, Jim. No, we're good. We're good. Thanks. Yeah. A few weeks ago, I was in the God and Coffee group, and we were playing with the question, you know, are you afraid to die? What's your relationship with death? You know, and you know, most people will say that, you know, they're not afraid with death, but they're afraid of like a painful, slow, arduous, torturous death. And that, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But what if this? Could it be that maybe we're more afraid to live than to die? You know, suicide. We've all been touched by it in one way or another. And the more I'm touched by it, the more I observe it, I think there's something going on that it's not so much that a person wants to die as much as they want to avoid the reality of living. And so therefore, it's a valid question to each of us. You know, life is wanting to open up its beauty to you and its fullness and its just amazingness, you know. But I know for me, I'm afraid of what's new. I don't like it. I'm a Virgo. I like my life ordered and structured. I like to put things in order and have a sequence. It is, you know. My moon? Oh, I'm trying to... I think it's in Gemini.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I think.
There's up there.
Oh, see up there. Okay. Well, yeah. All right. Whatever. thank you, Kelly. No, thank you. That's a great question. Yeah. Okay. But you know, again, it's as we go through life and things come into our life, it's an opportunity for us to live and see things in a new way. And again, sometimes it's scary and sometimes it's painful. But I think coming back to this idea of sacred relationship and sacred kinship, maybe just play with the question: is this really about, you know? I can't go down this rabbit trail, even though I really want to. You know, the whole resurrection story and death story of Jesus. You know, our minds get all wrapped up and did it really happen? You know, how could someone die and come back from the dead? And science and religions, you know, they just go back and forth. And I don't find that nearly as captivating as this idea of what it says in the Gospel of Philip: die and resurrect in this body now. There's in opening to the newness of life, to the freshness of life, oftentimes there's something in us that needs to die. Die before you live. I love that it's a big theme in the movie The Shawshank Redemption. That's one of my favorite movies, and it's this whole idea of, you know, living in this prison and dying before you can go out and live. So, what I'd like to do here is share with you five sacred values of kinship, and then reflect on it in a couple of ways. These five sacred values are inspired by the author Randy Woodley. So Randy Woodley, if this is interesting to you, you can Google him and see where these things come from. But he wrote these things, and they've just really grabbed my heart. And so I want to share them with you and add my own reflections to them to try to, you know, kind of put a little context around what we're talking about here. So the first value is to see life as harmony. Gwen, can you help me with something? Think of a three-note chord on the piano, okay? And would you start by just playing the individual notes of those chords? Chung, chung, chung. So in just a minute, okay? And then I'll have you play all three of them, okay? But harmony, I really think, you know, just to understand this tonally will help. So go ahead, just play three notes of a chord. Yeah. Play them again and just tune in to the sound of each of those notes. Mm-hmm. In the West, thank you, keep that same chord in mind, all right? You know, we compartmentalize. I've got my spiritual life, I've got my physical life, I've got my economic life, I've got my family life, I've got my personal life, you know, and we're so good at putting things in boxes. We do the same spiritually. Each one of those notes could represent an experience or an expression of spirituality in the world. Are each of those notes the same? No, they're different, okay? And again, if we just park on how different they are, we create these illusions of being separate and different from each other. Would you now play all three of those notes together? Yeah, just listen to it again. Yeah. Harmony. Play something disharmonious, like a tritone or something. No, yeah? Well, yeah, no, yeah. No, but this is so funny. Again, and churches are so weird. I'm a music major, and so we studied the evolution of music in the church, of all things, where it started. But there's a tone. Can you play a tritone, an augmented fourth? Just one and a sharp four, like a C and an F sharp. Yeah, play it again. You know, for years in the church, that was not used. It was called the devil's chord. Yeah. But why? Because it was as music was evolving, it was so hard to embrace that as something that's good. It's like, you know, God bless our churches, you know, we're going to keep the holy and uncomfortable out, you know, and whatever. And, you know, it's still true today, unfortunately. But, you know, this idea here, though, is, again, to see and take everything in harmony, realizing that not everything's the same. Sometimes people here at Unity misunderstand. They say, oh, you guys just have no spine. You believe everything, you know, and you just put it all in a blender and mix it up. And I'm just here to say, no, 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 no. In the spiritual life, Christianity is not the same as Judaism, is not the same as Islam, is not the same as Buddhism, is not the same as Confucianism, is not the same as agnosticism, is not the same as whatever other ism out there. Each one has its own respective beauty. And so we can hold that. But then when we allow those different tones to live and come together, there's a delicious harmony that comes. The same is true with your life and in sacred relationship. How we tend to the grounds out here. David, I really appreciate how hard you're working to make this place beautiful. But there's you know, how we treat this land we live in is a spiritual act. How we interact with food is a relational act. How we set up our economy is a moral act. How we treat immigrants is a loving act. You see, it's all related. It's all connected. And the invitation here in sacred relationship is to see the value in those connections and enjoy the harmony, the newness of the sounds that can come. Second, tangible spirituality. Tangible spirituality. Unity, this movement, started out. You know how it started out? What the original name of this Unity was? Unity School of what? Of what? Practical Christianity. Yeah. What if we put that on our sign out there? Unity School of Practical Christianity. You know? I don't think the Fillmores ever thought that it would evolve into this whole movement and denominations, but this is what we humans do with things. And again, there's nothing wrong with it. But the idea was for what unity was to be an additive, a supplement to people's spiritual experience, particularly Christianity. What was happening at the time is that psychology, Freudian psychology, was entering into the West, as well as Eastern mysticism and spirituality, only Americans can do, you know, there were those who resisted it, put up a wall and said, no, 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 no. They were the fundamentalists who insisted on the historical, literal, grammatical interpretation of the Bible. And that, you know, that grew out. The other movement were those like the Fillmores, Ernest Holmes, and others in New Thought Spirituality who sought to integrate and harmonize psychology with Eastern philosophy and Buddhism and put them together. And so unity was a place for that. And people would come and gather and be invited to come and then go back to their Catholic churches or their Baptist churches or Methodist churches, their synagogues, their, you know, whatever. So, but the idea here for us today is to, when we think of spirituality, to think of it practically and tangibly, that there is something sacred in a tree. There's something sacred in a lake. There's something sacred in the mountains. And boy, I just have to tell you that I'm really feeling that and enjoying that here as a resident of Coeur d'Alene. It's just, there's something so beautiful and still about it. But the idea is that it's tangible and that it's practical. And kind of related to that, again, is our connectedness to all creation. This goes back to remembering our place in the universe. The universe was here millions and billions of years before we were here, right? We're one of the youngest expressions, and so we can almost think of the universe as a parent and as a teacher. You know? Just, you know. I often tell you, just and the idea here is to listen to the land, watch and listen to the land, what it's saying. You know, and the more that Lake Coeur d'Alene is becoming my personal friend. You know, when I just watch and listen to the lake, I just marvel at its essence and its being, in spite of all of the human activity that's going around it. I told you the story last week of, you know, standing, it was a cold, rainy day, and just experiencing a stillness in the land that was going. And then the next day, taking a walk along Sanders Beach and seeing these little white little things, you know, floating in the water, floating golf balls from the resort. Just how odd, you know? And I don't know, just listening to the lake, again, this may sound weird, the lake is just like, these human beings are just interesting creatures, you know, spending large sums of money to chase a little white ball, you know, and all over the place, and what it is. But it's about perspective. It's about context. It's, again, about realizing that we and I are not the center of the universe, but if we can open our heart and open our ears and listen, we can find so much wisdom. But we're not taught to do that. We see nature and creation as a commodity. And I think if we look at a survey of the human, especially the American, Western relationship with the land, it's all about extraction. What can I take? What can I gather? You know, and how can I manage it? And again, we're all beneficiaries of it. I am. You know, I'm standing up here wearing clothes, speaking to you in a building, you know, that was all made from materials from this planet. But as we think about the future of this church, you know, and what do we want to be, my invitation to you remains the same. Listen to the land. What would the land say about the future? Do we really need another 500-seat church building? Again, what would the land say to that? I was thinking about this the other day. You know, this state is called Idaho. How long has it been named Idaho? Do you know, Peter? Peter knows.
It's Indian for mountains.
Indian for mountains. Native American. Okay, all right. When did that name come into being?
Nowadays it means I don't know.
Yeah. Can we say it's been within 200 years? You know? So before Idaho ever was, it was just land. But how interesting, you know, that we draw lines, we make this little panhandle shape, you know, and call it Idaho. Yeah. All right. Intentional community. Intentional community means that we understand that we are not individual beings. You know, in America, this is the land of rugged individualism. How many of us have ancestors, if we trace our ancestors, who came here from another land to escape political or religious persecution and what? Come to America and find the land of wealth and freedom. You know, it runs in our DNA. It runs in our blood. But I remember talking to my dad about this. We would go back and forth about this. He was from blue collar Midwest Wisconsin, you know, and pull yourself up by your bootstraps, go out and earn a living type of guy. Well, he grew up, and I was born in a city called Greendale, Wisconsin. Greendale, if you look it up, was one of three green cities started by the Roosevelt administration in the late 1930s. The government came in, built houses. In order to live there, you had to have a certain income range. My grandparents on my mother's side were one of the first residents of Greendale. In order for them to move in there, my grandmother, who was working in a hosiery factory, had to quit her job because they were making too much money. But they were moved in, and they were part of the original tenants of Greendale. Later on, my dad's parents moved in there. And after a time, people were offered the opportunity to buy their house from the government. So I had to remind my dad, you grew up in government-subsidized housing. You know that, right? Then I said, you know, you'd get Social Security, right? Yeah. Yeah, but I get what I pay into it. No, you don't. It's a progressive tax. Okay, do you get Medicare? Well, yeah, okay, so we're all socialists, you know, because it was like, socialist was like a four-letter word, you know, it's like, how free are we really? No, we're not, my friends. I don't mean to get all political, but we are connected.
And what happens is life has this way of dismantling these illusions of separation and creating visions of reality. Let me tell you a story from my personal life. If you were here last week, you heard me tell you that one of the gifts that this land is giving me is a very clear message that I've never experienced before, that I belong here just as I am. And I know that because my body knows it. When I tell you that, and even tell you that now, there's a stillness, there's a peace, and there's a spaciousness. I belong here just as I am. It's cool. It's like, just zen out on it, man. It's great. And then what happens is these strange new thoughts enter my mind. This might mess with some of you. I've just gotten a sense that I'm going to slow down becoming an Idaho resident. Can I live here just as I am, as someone who's lived in another state that we humans have called Washington? There's some guys I work out with at the gym downtown. They say, you can't drive those Washington plates here. People are going to curse you out, especially because mine are University of Washington vanity plates, you know, and that's just like, you don't do that here. So I did a little experiment. Last week, I think it might have been Wednesday morning, I thought, I'm just gonna do something. I sometimes take an early morning walk on the Tubbs Hill Trail. I'm gonna put on my University of Washington sweatshirt and my University of Washington cap, and I just wanted to track my experience as I was walking the trail. I kid you not. As only God and all of its messing with this life would have, within the first 5 minutes of my walk, I passed not one, but two people wearing Washington State Cougar sweatshirts. Yeah. And you know what? As we passed each other on the trail, we had the most friendly, delightful greeting. We could look each other in the eye and say, good morning, good morning, good morning. People here are so nice and so friendly, you know? And as I was tracking my own experience, it was like, oh, wow. Okay, I'm not some alien from another land. You know, I'm loved and welcomed here. And those people wearing a shirt from, you know, a college that, we're not enemies. You know, we're just different. And then, about 5 minutes after that, I passed a gentleman wearing a USA hat. And I thought to myself, I'm an American. I'm a U.S. citizen. And I don't know if Idaho wants to become its own country. You know, I may have to get a passport and pass a citizenship test or whatever. But you notice how my mind went there?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, when we think of immigrants coming here, what do we say? Speak the language, eat our food, you know, drive like us and all that kind of stuff. And okay, sure, yes, that's helpful, you know. But can we really welcome other people here too as they are? Can I experience a sense of welcoming and belonging as someone that's just growing up here? The reason this is important is there's a pattern that I have in my life of wanting to belong, of wanting to please, of wanting to blend and shape in. It's kind of like a chameleon shapeshifter thing. And so part of this present moment experience is, you know, I want to be genuinely, unauthentically me. I don't want to be obnoxious about it or condescending about it, but this is who I, James Kress, is. And as I bring that James beingness, you know, into this newer place called Idaho and just be with it, my God, I have to tell you, it's beautiful. And I would invite you to do the same thing. Because each and every one of you here carries a history and carries a story. Some of you have lived here all your life, and you know it, and okay, that's great. Many others of you have come from other places, you know. And so it's the idea of just being able to be true and be faithful and be in integrity to that. So thank you for listening to that. All right. Now, cooperative unity. And this is, I'll talk about more about this next week. But in a cooperative, all of us are members and all of us are owners. I've spent some time working in the credit union space, and in credit unions, all members are equal owners. Whether you have $100 on deposit or $1 billion on deposit, every member has a voice. And I think about that here. Every one of you has a place and has a voice. And sometimes we outsource that placeness and we outsource that beingness to someone or something else, and we don't engage. But can you open your heart to a greater understanding of, no, you're here, and you belong here, and your voice matters, and it makes a difference just as you are, just because you are. That's cooperative unity. So, okay, before I show you that, all right. I want you to just look at this, because what's at stake? How does this play out? I want to share a couple of examples here as we wrap things up. I just want you, as I show you this image, to just pay attention to your body, okay? Does anything happen in your body when you look at this? Anybody? Just again, don't think about it. What is it?
I'm agitated.
You're agitated.
Yeah.
What do you feel in your body?
Uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable? Where?
Here. In
your heart?
In my arm.
Okay. Anyone else?
I'm hungry.
Hungry. Anyone else? Peter? What's James up to here? Okay, all right. What's that? Yeah. So anyway, so just so you know, I'm a part of a men's circle, and we were doing this session on they call it quantum leadership. It's like, oh my, what is this all about? It's learning about how to read the energy and the vibration of a group. You know, when you show up. And so an example that they used is Cracker Barrel. Now I didn't grow up with Cracker Barrel on the west side. It's not over there, but I've experienced it in the south when I go to visit my daughter in Georgia. And since I've come over here, you know, one of the early places I found is Cracker Barrel. I love Cracker Barrel. Give me my 6-egg omelet, my 12 pieces of bacon, my 6 pieces of sausage, my biscuits and gravy, my stack of pancakes. Oh, baby, I'm in food nirvana, you know. And I learned that something happened at Cracker Barrel that caused a great stir. And it was the new CEO coming in and offering to revise the logo. Now, I mean, if it were me, you know, if you're going to mess with the menu, I might have something to say, you know, give me my full-on breakfast. It wasn't messing with the menu, it was messing with the logo. There were people who thought that the removal of the man was an assault on white culture. Yeah, yeah. They had an interview with the CEO, you know, because they lost a lot of money when this happened, and the CEO says, I feel like I've been fired by America. Because a group of people just really got on this and thought that why the hell are we doing that? Removing the dude sitting in the chair on a barrel was an assault on white culture. And I couldn't help but think to myself, you know, we white folks are so fragile.
He's yellow. He's not even white.
True. Okay, I guess we don't know. Thank you, Cena. Yes. All right. But many people saw Cracker Barrel, you know, as this, you know, whatever it was. But it's just, you know, it's, and again, I'm trying not to, even though it is coming across judgy, I don't mean it to be judgy or condescending, but just to notice how something as subtle as shifting a logo of a long-time thing can be so disruptive. Yeah. And so coming back to this idea of sacred relationship, the idea is to hold your reaction to it, whether it's icky or whether it's pleasant or hungry, you know, whatever it is, hold it in love. Hold it in curiosity. Hold it in judgment. Because even the people who were averse to this, I'm sure had things that they were, you know, afraid about. And again, we're not here to demean or diminish or put that down, but to get to know it.
Yeah, they don't like change.
Yeah.
It goes back to change.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that I love about Coeur d'Alene, what I love about Idaho, is this energy toward nostalgia. You know, one of the first people I met here said to me, if you like America the way it used to be, you'll love it here in Idaho. Okay. And I get it. It reminds, this place reminds me a lot of Greendale, where I grew up. You know, mostly white, people from similar economic things, lots of families and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you know, it feels really good. Here's the invitation. Keep leaning into the nostalgia. Keep going further back. What happens is we go back, but we sort of stop at the 50s. Or the 60s, you know. Okay, and that's good. Yeah, great era, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But keep going back. Don't avoid nostalgia. Really feel into it and see where it takes you. I think you might find that we have more of a common ancestry than you think. One more image I want to show you here. Sexual orientation and expression is another one of these confounding things that happens, right? And it's the centerpiece to our existence as people. And so, you know, when I was coming of age in the 80s and 90s, you know, the narrative was fear about homosexuality, homophobia. And that fear was amplified by this thinking that not only is homosexuality present, but that there is an aggressive, conscious, external social engineering agenda and assault to convert everybody else into homosexuality. That was the message of the church that I was a part of. So we're going to stand our ground and we're going to fight against it, you know, and stop this onslaught, okay? Today, it's like that argument has evolved into transgender and queer. How many of you heard it? Send your boy to school and they might come home a girl. Send your girl to school and they might come home a boy. And again, the idea here now is to go back, you know, what's the fear? What's the longing? Well, as I was driving around the other day, I saw this bumper sticker on the back of a car. I'd love to just get, again, just pay attention to your body, how your body reacts to this. Okay, you're going to make all kinds of meaning from it, all right? Don't go there. Just notice what happens to your body when you look at this. You've seen that? What? Makes your stomach hurt? Yeah, anyone else? Again, just your body.
My heart gets tight.
Heart gets tight? Yeah. Anybody else?
Throw up.
What? Yeah. Yeah. So again, the invitation here is to integrate, to apply everything that we've been talking about here in sacred relationship and kinship. How can we relate and how can we be connected, you know, to everything, including the unpleasant? Instead of just kind of, you know, and othering and enemying. No. Do we really believe that there's something here to explore and to learn and grow from? I don't pretend to know, but I was just like, wow, when I saw this, I was like, holy shit, you know? Okay? You know, but somehow it was imagined, okay? So here's the deal. I shared this with you last week. God does not need our defense, nor has God asked for it. This has been really good for me as a minister because as a, you know, representative of God, you know, it's my job to defend and explain and justify God's thing. Now, God's never asked for that. Nor does God need it. But instead, we know that God is solidly with us. God, sacred, the divine, the universe, love, whatever name is for you. Okay? And scientific and spiritual progress is not the bath of better answers, but better questions. Scientific discovery and learning, if we're honest, is not so much about how our questions are answered, but the new questions that arise. And I think those questions get better and better. I want to just close with a poem here. And just allow this to go. This is called A Lost Myth. A Lost Myth by Mark Nepo. There was a man afraid to live. To cure his fear, he was turned into a bird imprisoned by a cloud. And only when he opened his heart would the cloud part. Only then would he turn back into a person. Years went by, and he drifted like a secret in the center of the storm. Every spring, his sorrow would build until the cloud he lived in would darken and shower the earth. Finally, He exhausted his fear and fell from the sky, where he became a fire with no home. And from his ash, the person waiting inside all those years began to form. Amen, and so it is.
Trees talk to one another through the soil and the breeze. Have you felt the light under the ground, weaving the earth to life all around? The grass feeds the herd feeds the plant feeds the bird drops the seeds grow the trees give the air that we breathe. In you is the life that's in me, and the life in the bird is the breath in the tree. And if we can believe in one thing that's true, is the life that's in me, is the life that's in you. There's a message blowing through the maple and oak. And if we try to pick something out by itself, we'll find it's connected to everything else. The plant and the animal, the predator and prey, the prairie and the fire, the night and the day. Love and grief, life and death, all bound together by the very same breath. Life that's in you
is the life that's in me, and the life in a bird is the life in a tree. And if we can believe in one thing that's true, it's the life that's in me, is the life that's in you.
The life that's in me, and the life in a bird is the life in a tree. And if we can believe in one thing that's true, is the life that's in me, is the life that's in me.